In today's Shadow Talk, we take cybersecurity end-of-year predictions and turn them on their heads. Rather than focus on the threats and worrying trends on the horizon, we instead concentrate on the positive developments that we can all look forward to in 2019. We'll discuss open source tools that can help all of us become more secure, improvements to browser security, and long overdue changes in security awareness, education, and diversity that should make 2019 an altogether better year for the InfoSec community. All this to come on today's Shadow Talk. Hello and welcome to our final Shadow Talk podcast of 2018. Alongside me today is the ever reliable Dr. Richard Gold.
Hey Rafa, how are you doing?
Really well, thank you. Thanks again for joining. So a couple of weeks ago, we had Harrison Van Riper and Rick Holland on the podcast discussing forecasts for 2019, which is an episode I urge all of you to check out. But for this final installment of Shadow Talk, we're going to look at predictions and forecasts from a slightly different perspective. So this week, Richard published his own list of 10 positive predictions and trends that he's looking forward to. So we're going to spend today going over these in a little more detail. We won't cover all 10 in today's podcast. So for the full breakdown, check out the Digital Shadows Twitter account at Digital Shadows or Richard's own account at Dr. Shellface. We'll add some links to these to the description of this episode. Right, Richard, there are a few different themes across your 10 predictions, so I thought we could group some of these together for our discussion. Let's start with browser security, where you gave us two different developments. The first is the continued decline of Flash and other vulnerable browser plugins like Java and Silverlight, while the second relates to increasing efforts to deprecate unencrypted communications by the browser vendors.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool, actually, what's been done in the browser space. So certainly things like Google Chrome have really been pushing the edges of the envelope, so to say. So we've seen stuff from them on security UI UX, so user experience, which has been really, really good. They, you know, there's been a lot of discussion and, you know, there's been a lot of back and forth, a lot of heated debate, a lot of different opinions, which is good, about what actually constitutes good security user experience. Does the green padlock help? Is it confusing? You know, and I think that they did, there was one test that they did where they were shocked because they finally realized that somebody said, oh, a padlock. I always thought it was a handbag related to shopping. And then when you hear that being said, you look at it and you're like, you know what? It does look like a handbag, actually. So, and, you know, just because we've been drilled in a particular way, we saw things a certain way. So it was good to have that sort of fresh perspective. So there's been a lot of work on that. Things like now, if you submit information through through a web form that's not encrypted, so it doesn't, the information is not sent over HTTPS, the browsers will complain. They'll see this information is not being sent in a secure fashion. This is great. You know, I remember when, you know, Gmail was first out and HTTPS login to protect your credentials was, you know, an optional extra you had to click on. So that's really good. As you already mentioned, Rafa, that, you know, the big nasties from, you know, this is probably going back of like 3 years or so to, you know, the glory days of Flash bugs and Java and Silverlight. We still see, you know, this year and just recently there's been issues with Flash and more O-Day popping left, right and center. But in general, it's trending downwards quite dramatically. We've seen HTML5 basically take over completely for web video, you know, YouTube, Netflix, these kinds of things. So there's much less need to have these kind of vulnerable browser plugins than there was. I expect this trend to continue in 2019, and I expect the browser vendors as well to be more aggressive in pushing security features into the browser. They're already talking about how to deprecate TLS 1.0, 1.1. So watch the space.
And do you think that means individuals, organizations, is this something that's happening on the vendor side that they can just sit back, or do they need to be doing anything, or do we need to be doing anything actively to take advantage of these developments that you mentioned?
Well, the browser vendors are pretty cognizant of the fact that people will just run with the defaults. So they are trying to make more secure defaults. So that is great, because that is how you protect everybody, right? You know, having some amazing security feature that's hidden behind, you know, 34 drop downs and click buttons and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, great, but, you know, what's the secure defaults? That's where the action is. I would say that, you know, if you do talk to somebody who happens to be close to a browser vendor, then, you know, voicing your support is always good. I think that people need to hear that these features are appreciated and desired. So I think just raising that awareness is a really good thing to be doing.
So yeah, so another theme prevalent across a number of your predictions is the wide availability of tools, a lot of them open source, that individuals and organizations can use to harden their own systems. So you mentioned a few, Richard. This included Harden Tools, Bloodhound. Let's go through some of these, because I assume some of our listeners may not have heard of some of these before. So which ones in particular are you most excited about, or would you recommend, and why exactly?
So we can start with Harden Tools. I think that's one thing that doesn't get that much press, but I just absolutely love it. It's a really simple tool which disables the most risky features of your Windows operating system. So, and also the Office applications. Those things like, you know, disabling macros, it stops the cmd.exe being opened easily, it turns off things for like the only embedding, DDE, and these kinds of things, which are used by applications or malware effectively to get code execution in Office systems, in Office applications rather. And it just, it's, you download it from GitHub, you run it, you click a couple of buttons, and that's it, and then you're done. And it just makes the attack surface so much smaller and really makes things difficult for attackers. So if you couple that with just the built-in Windows Defender antivirus, which, you know, present in Windows 10, and that, you know, you've got those two things together, then that's actually makes your system quite hard to compromise.
So how long has Harden Tools been out? I mean, why aren't more people necessarily using it? Is it just an issue of awareness, or is there something else to that?
So Harden Tools has been around for a couple of years, in 2016. And as you say, I think it really is just an awareness thing. I mean, there is a caveat, which is that it, you know, if you use macros for your core business, or you use macros at home for whatever reason, then turning them off will break it. So, you know, you can't just apply it blindly. You have to have had, you know, a little bit of time to think about whether or not you need any of these features. But, you know, for the vast majority of people and the vast majority of use cases, you know, most home users are not running PowerShell. Most home users are not using, you know, DDE inside of Office, you know, or running, you know, JavaScript from emails that they've received, this kinds of thing. So there are cases where it could cause you problems, but I think these cases are very small. I mean, obviously you need to know what you're doing, but if you're a tech savvy, security savvy person, and you've got, you know, like a lot of people, IT support tasks to do over the holiday period, and you're confronted with a Windows machine, you know, if you just do a quick scan to make sure that there's no conflict, get Harden Tools on there, the attack surface is just dramatically reduced.
So that's Harden Tools. I mean, given its name, it's obviously a defensive tool. It's used for hardening of systems. Another one you mentioned, which is more on the offensive security side, is Bloodhound, right? So what's Bloodhound and why do you recommend it? Or why are you so excited about it, maybe?
So Bloodhound is a pretty exciting tool, actually, because it can be used both for offensive and defensive purposes. And exactly that dual use is, I think, where it gets so interesting. So one of the cool things with Bloodhound is that it has a dual use. You can really use it for both offensive and defensive purposes. What it does is it maps out your Active Directory and displays this to you using a nice GUI, basically. And so you can see the relationships between computers. It gives you information about the users. And because it uses a graph database, you can ask it questions. For example, what's the shortest path to domain admin from where I am? So it can help you find out computers where the domain admins have been logged into. And it can tell you if the account that you have allows you to have access to those machines whose domain admins have logged into, or it tells you the path you need to go to get to the machines where the domain admins have logged into. And once you have, you know, that kind of an access, how you can use it to, you know, move from one group to another, escalate privileges, and to take over a domain. And so it's very, very good for visualizing your Active Directory environment and seeing, you know, what kind of surprises are lurking in there. And you can use it as a defensive person to see what your security posture is like. You can use it to see if there have been any misconfigurations. You know, I was reading a story the other day, can't remember where, but someone who was adminning a Windows system, and they found out that there was a configuration error, and, you know, all the local admin users had been put into the domain admin group. So then if you had local admin on a box, you're also a domain admin. Great. As an attacker, you can use it to map out your target's environment. And then, as I say, with queries like shortest path to domain admin, it gives you the way to go to get to where you want to go. And there's even tools which look at automating this approach. So Bloodhound, there's a sort of an add-on called GoFetch, where you can say, right, that's where I want to go. And it will automate the post-exploitation tasks so to jump through the network to get to you to where you want to go, which is kind of cool. I mean, it's a bit of stunt hacking, really, but it's a pretty nice little feature.
All right, thank you for that one, Richard. Now, a final theme that we should discuss is around the area of general security awareness in mainstream circles, as well as opportunities for greater education and collaboration. Now, you've got a few different predictions here, Richard, that we've grouped together. So what exactly were you getting at with these ones?
Well, I think there's been quite a lot of changes in cybersecurity or InfoSec or whatever you want to call it as time's gone on. And now I think one of the things that I've really noticed is that cybersecurity is now something that is accepted by the mainstream. It's something that you see, you know, on the front pages, you know, whether it is, you know, nation state hacking activity, whether it's the latest cybercrime shenanigans, you know, it's something which is very much in people's minds. People are talking about it. And that awareness, I say, is a positive thing to look forward to in 2019, not the preachers, but the fact that people are much more aware now of things than they used to be. We've seen that, you know, various governments, you know, like here in the UK, you know, the National Cybersecurity Centre, the NCSC, you know, other, I think Canada's recently put together a similar kind of organisation just recently. So I expect this trend to continue as well in 2019, that there will be more work from governments and also industry about, you know, these big issues. So I think that we've seen a big change in how it's seen. It's no longer just that niche thing that's either people didn't care about, or it was only, you know, defense contractors or, you know, major financial institutions that cared about it. And I think everyday people are becoming much, much more aware of it, which is great. Especially in when we've had the attacks like Bad Rabbit, NotPetya, WannaCry, these kinds of things, where, you know, regular people were impacted as well by this kind of indiscriminate activity. I think we're going to see in the future as well just that general increase in awareness, which I think is great for everybody.
Yeah, and you alluded to some of the big news stories over the last couple of years. I mean, probably the chicken egg situation, which one has caused the other, but obviously the US election, still hearing stories about that all the time. You said WannaCry brought everything home to a lot of people, how disruptive these attacks can be. And now we've got probably a long overdue debate in terms of data collection and user privacy with all the different social media, Facebook stories that we've had over the last year as well. So I guess, yeah, that is a positive thing, having more people, not just people within the industry, talking about it. I think that's probably good for all of us. Now, I should probably mention this as well. In your predictions, you mentioned the lack of women in cybersecurity as well, which obviously still needs a lot of work.
The fact that there's only two guys here today is part of it, as you mentioned yourself.
Exactly. And some of our listeners will remember that we had a special podcast a few months ago featuring some of our great female colleagues here at Digital Shadows who were discussing this exact issue alongside the launch of our own women's network. Now, this was really well received. So thank you everyone who gave us that feedback. So as a promise for next year, we here at Digital Shadows and at Shadow Talk, we're going to do more on this front as well. You can expect to hear a lot more female voices on the podcast in the new year, along with more episodes devoted to discussing broader issues of diversity and intersectionality within our industry as well. So that's another thing to look forward to for the next year. Well, I think that's a good place for us to end today. As I said earlier, check out either Richard or the Digital Shadows Twitter account for more on his positive predictions for 2019. You can also find a stream of research content from the team on the website at resources.digitalshadows.com. Richard, thank you very much for your many appearances on the podcast this year. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Rafa. It's always a lot of fun for me to do these, and I hope people like them and really enjoy it. So thanks for letting me be on.
And thank you for listening. From all of us here, all the best over the holiday period, and join us again in the new year. Until then.